suddenly the moment.
Hey folks, how you doing? Episode number 198 of the Legal Mullet Podcast is right here in front of me right now. And of course, we're going to be chatting about something coming from the past and the future in a steel, stainless steel car, I should say, a DeLorean, as we say. And apparently they're back out on the road right now too. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien, the Legal Mullet, coming here from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia. And of course, coming all the way over in Kentucky. That is, of course, the one, the only Derek Marshall. What a piece of junk, a Star Wars podcast. Buddy, how are you?
What? What podcast? What wars? What?
What wars? What wars?
What?
Mr. Bowman, can you help us? What wars? How you going?
Doing great, man. Finally able to make my way on here, like, by myself. I know we've done kind of a snippet when you joined us last, one of the last times on What a Piece of Junk, and then we went right into with Scott, Nathan, and myself joining you on a mullet. So it's good to be back running solo with you this time, though that's another show. So, but anyways, yeah, great to be here, man. So, and it's great that, you know, it's like, you know, 10 o'clock Eastern time in the U.S., and it is early morning Sunday for you in Aussie time. So super excited that we were finally able to clash and get together on this. So, yeah.
Oh, 100%. Just after what we call brekkie in the morning. And brekkie, of course, is short for breakfast out here in Australia. Well, we have, of course, our cornflakes and marmalade on toast. No, we don't. No, we don't, folks. No. We have a three-shot coffee. We have cornflakes. And we smother it with, of course, full cream milk. And then, of course, we also have two pieces of toast, heavy on the marge, as margarine. And, of course, then it goes with either peanut butter, heavily salted, or Vegemite.
At first, I thought you were going to say you cover it in the blood of your kill of the day or your villain, you know, or your nemesis, right? So, or those giant bugs that, you know, you see the TikTok videos of all the time. So, but... No, I mean, it sounds glorious. I mean, obviously, I'm getting ready for bed here soon. So maybe in the morning, if Sophia does not want me to make Baby Yoda waffles yet again, maybe I'll try that.
I tell you what, Vegemite's one of those funny ones because a lot of people would say, what's Vegemite like? To look at it, looks like Nutella, just a little bit richer, a little bit darker on it. You put it on the toast and then you bite into the toast. And if you haven't tasted it before, the amount of salt in Vegemite is what does it. It tastes like somebody's got a jar of salt and just going. And when you say stop, they just keep going. And then they put it away. And so it's a heavy bite. The trick is, like any topping, you use it sparingly. And that's the trick.
Okay. So kind of like sardines, as long as you use them sparingly, they're really good with everything else. But by itself, it's a bit of a salt lick.
Oh, it is. It is. It's a little bit like PB&J for you guys over there. Like, you know, we look at it and we go, really? You're going to put those two together? What?
Well, I'll have to see. Maybe I can get it from Amazon or something shipped across. Is that the brand or is that just the called Vegemite? Or is it?
No. Is it the when you guys put jelly and peanut butter together?
Okay, so it's that term. Okay, it's just the style of topping. Okay, cool. I myself usually with toast, I just normally some butter and apple butter. That's what I like. So
apple butter. Okay, what's that like?
It's kind of like if you not quite applesauce, but it's got that hint because it's obviously made from apples, but it's the jelly version of like strawberry and grape, but it's from apples. And I love it. So like I said, you get your nice warm toast, you get a, you know, nice slab of butter on it. So it's melted a little bit. You get that little pool of butter on top, you know, where it's melted. And then you put the slab of apple butter on it and mixes it in with it. And then, you know, and I like it with a sweeter type of bread, whether it's a sweet sourdough or really what we have, called sweet Hawaiian. Ooh. So yeah, that's what I like. And Sophia loves it. So if I make it, she eats it. When my wife makes it, cause she doesn't make it quite right, but don't tell my wife that, she doesn't really eat it. So I said, you got to mix the butter and the apple butter together. That's the key. So
this is what I love too, is now all the options, you know, back in the days of, you know, truck drivers going to a truck stop in the middle of the Queensland and New South Wales border, they'd be like, Toast Sanger, kept a couple of coffees on the side. And a coffee was just, you know, what we call in the military over here, a NATO, which is a standard. So a standard is, white coffee with two sugars, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's your standard. So let's have a NATO, you know, and that was it. That was your options. But now all the truck drivers have seen all the options. So they turn up the truck stops. They're like, "How much can I grab a? I'll have a toasted singer on sourdough bread. And can you make it cottage cheese? Hey, mate. And I want silver side, not ham. And just make sure it's just a little bit lightly buttered. And oh, for the coffee, can I have, you know, and that's what it's like now.
Crazy. Of course, I mean, yeah, but now they got to pay like $10 when before it used to be like, you know, a dollar, you know.
It's a lot more than they expected now. You know, it's crazy. Yeah. The options keep changing, you know, it's nuts. Mm-hmm. Now, before we go any further, folks, we've got to let you know how you can find this show and many others like it. If you'd like to follow this show, you can follow it, of course, at legalmulletnetwork.podbean.com. You can subscribe there on Podbean or on the Podbean app too, which is great too. It's a great way to catch all your podcasts and, of course, all the FPN ones too over there at fpnet.podbean.com. Subscribe there. You can catch this show and, of course, What a Piece of Junk of Star Wars podcast. Woo! And if you follow the little ticket down below there, that's just going, you can actually see we're also on socials at The Lethal Mullet. And I tell you what, we're now on TikTok and goodness knows what else we're on. We're on, Snapchats and these things just keep changing. It's getting too much to hold, but you can catch us on, of course, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter on that one too. Now, where can we find you, sir?
The main one you just mentioned, Facebook, that's where we run the What a Piece of Junk Star Wars podcast Facebook group, and you can find us there. And then you can find myself under there for Derek Marsh. And then you can also find me on Twitter at HoodieDM83. So HoodieDM83. 83. So
nice.
And then you could find the Twitter handle for the Facebook or for the What a Piece of Junk podcast at What Wars, since that's the joke. But that is literally at What Wars.
Nice one. So I gotta say, one of the great things I've been able to do in the last week is join yourself and Scott, and of course Mr. Miracle, or should we call him Dave Phil Cloney?
Or, you know, Gooey Chewy, if he likes to mostly be handled.
Gooey Chewy, Gooey. And that was a very enlightening discussion about Star Wars Andor.
Cassian Andor.
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 What are you doing there, Andor? Come on now.
Skarsgård is brilliant.
Oh, is he ever? You know, I keep saying people haven't checked out Arn the Knight Templar, you know, and it's a great movie. Have you seen that yet?
No, I have not seen that one. I know you mentioned it to us, so I still need to check it out. So I'll put it on my list of things. I don't know if I can get it on what streaming service, or I'll have to like try and actually find it at a old bookstore, video store that, those half price book places that you can find where people turn stuff in. So
That's what to look up for, folks. So Arn the Knight Templar, and it's all about basically a Templar that goes out and it's a love story. I don't want to spoil it, but basically he meets Saladin in the actual Crusades, and then comes back and pretty much whips all of the Danish forces and stuff together, and the Swedish forces, and all of those massive armies together. And they fight for their own countries, all singularly as well, too. It's a fantastic film.
I'll definitely look forward to checking it out. And does he go, Arn, the Knight Templar?
He says, Arn, what are you doing? He does say Arn. It's Arn. Maybe he should be a pirate. Stellan Skarsgård, the pirate.
He is a pirate, though. He was Orlando Bloom's father.
Arn, that's right.
He's Bootstrap.
Bootstraps on his bootstraps. I want to see a dog movie where they're pirates. You know. Oh, I can watch that first one, but that's about all I can watch of those movies, I tell you.
They are fun, but they're not. They're just one of those movies again where you just want to shut off your brain and just enjoy, you know, a pirate movie. So,
and now, folks, we're heading into the news segment here now too. So we've talked about Andor a little bit on the last couple of shows, but obviously we're going to check out your special you did, of course, on What a Piece of Junk of Star Wars podcast recently. And what, in a nutshell, what are your thoughts on the show?
I will have some breaking news here that I just told you a little bit ago, but I'll breaking news here on Lethal Mullet, because unfortunately I won't be able to join the guys tomorrow when they record on episode 4, but I will say this here now on the Fandom Podcast Network that I think Cassian Andor, or Andor I should say, is the show, is the best Star Wars yet, and it is the better than The Mandalorian. So I've said it. That's it. So,
and yeah, better than the sequel trilogy.
Wow, everything's better than the sequel trilogy. So even some of the I wouldn't say Resistance, because that is part of the sequel trilogy, and I never finished the first couple episodes. But yes, everything else Disney has put out has been light years above the movies. So hopefully when they get back to making Star Wars movies, they'll be good again. But if they're anything like this, you know, just sign up Tony Gilroy and we'll be all in good hands.
Yeah, I want to see more Tony Gilroy. I also want to see Garrett Edwards come back and maybe do another movie.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely owe him another movie, or at least some type of show on Disney Plus would be wonderful. So
it's funny how they're all giving the cred to Tony Gilroy. No doubt he's done well, but he didn't film the damn thing. It was Gareth.
Yeah, I mean, it was all writing, but then it's. You do what the writing is, but it's still the visionary and what they were able to do. And he worked with him on it. So it's not like he just completely wrote it by himself. He worked with him on it. So yeah, I completely agree. And it's not like, to be fair, it's not like Favreau and Filoni haven't done anything. Like, I will still say that some of the best Star Wars episodes are coming from Star Wars Rebels and the Clone Wars, which is, again, what Filoni put together. So there's nothing to say that they haven't put anything, you know, that isn't worth recognizing, and that's been carrying the banner in my heart for Star Wars for a while now. But like I said, I love Mandalorian, but and especially what the second half of Book of Boba Fett was, right, when it was just Mandalorian season 2.5, the Darksaber stuff. But yeah, that was all really great. So
it's headed into a nice area, I think, too.
Well, this is what I want them to do. I don't want them just to stick in this little box, though, right, where they're 5 years before the original trilogy and 5 years after the original trilogy, right? So we're getting like this 20-some year span, right? Like, I love it. So as long as we're still getting some good Star Wars, but I don't know if you've, you know, talked about it on here or if you've been watching it. Have you been watching The Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power?
I have, yes.
Do you like it?
I do.
Okay. I think that's what they need to do with Star Wars. They need to give us the Old Republic or the High Republic, whatever they want to call it, and go 2,000-3,000 years in the past or 2,000-3,000 years in the future. I don't care, but give us that, right? I mean, that's what I want. I want where it's, you know, we know a little bit about these characters, but just completely new stuff. And just, you know, has nothing to do with the Skywalker saga whatsoever.
We just need no ties to stuff at all. This is the biggest mistake they did was, I mean, the sequel trilogy was what was banking them to start with, to get it out there. You know, that's a given, you know, because that's what people wanted to see and that's what George sold it with, you know, right?
Yep.
But the whole idea was to start their own stuff, get their own stuff out there. Rogue One was the closest we got to that, even though we're still relying on Vader turning up and the original you know, X-Wing and Y-Wing pilots turning up, all that sort of stuff. But at the end of the day, it's, you know, new territory is what we want to see. Maybe I would have liked more of what the ideas we saw in the sequel trilogy done without those people, you know, without those, you know, fresh cast. Would have been a whole different thing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to go too far into this rabbit hole, but I felt like if they would have done better justice doing 7, 8, 9 being the last rodeo for our three original super, you know, our main cast, right, with Han Solo, Luke Skywalker, and Leia Organa, to get them back together and have that, and have Finn, Poe, and Rey and BB-8 be in the background and have them pass the torch, but have them be side characters, right? And then what could have happened is make a 10, 11, and 12, hello, more money, right? And that could have been the next Skywalker saga, right? The next generation. Yeah. And that been them. And really what they did with Rise of Skywalker with the whole dagger and everything else, they could have made that 10, 11, and 12. That could have been a three-movie trilogy and really stretch that out, bring the Emperor back, and he could have been the baddie. And, you know, obviously, you know, we had the untimely passing of Carrie Fisher, and then obviously they killed off Harrison Ford. And I wouldn't have cared if they would have killed off Luke Skywalker at that point, too, at the end of the ninth movie at some point, or if they would have done it the eighth, the way however they figured it out. But, you know, that's what it should have been. It should have been our last hurrah of the Skywalker saga. Hand the torch off to the newer characters, because obviously, you know, we weren't going to get that, but maybe we could have gotten Luke, you know, come back as a Force ghost, right? He could have been the Alec Guinness of the new era, the next generation, and been an apparition, you know, ghost for Rey. And I think that would have been a lot better if they would have just done that instead of just, to your point, Disney just wanted to do everything new, but yet they wanted to bank off the Star Wars name. And at the end of the day, they did, you know, the people that are actually paying for it, they just discredit us everything. Right now, again, some of the OG fans, I should say, like this stuff, and that's fine. You know, I am, like I said, open the same thing that, you know, we said with the sequel trilogy, the prequel trilogy. I mean, they weren't great, but at least they felt more Star Wars-y to me, in my opinion. But then the Clone Wars really helped the prequel trilogy. So if they do more with that in the sequel trilogy, that might be better, right? Yeah. And we may get some of that with the Mando, but they've really, just bringing in Filoni and Favreau, they've really established the original trilogy world still, and just kind of the Western Lawless point, which is great, but it's not doing us anything for me tying it to the sequel. Again, I'm fine if they don't, but that's what they really need. Or like I said, if they just want to forget about it, that's fine. But then let's just move on. But I mean, I like Diego Luna, or not Diego Luna, Oscar Isaacs. Obviously, Moon Knight was phenomenal. I love him as an actor. You know, it's going to take a lot to get him. And John Boyega is good with what he's done. He's done some other stuff, and he's been good. And they can do more with him if they wanted to. And you know, do some Disney Plus series. You know, they don't have to make them movies. So, oh well. Long story.
I agree. So, folks, the other news is, of course, 30th anniversary of Alice in Chains' Dirt, one of the seminal albums of the 90s. I mean, this is one of the greats when it comes to, you know, down-tuned, sluggy metal, and, of course, some great vocals from both Layne Staley and, of course, the man behind the guitars himself too, Jerry Cantrell. I mean, this is a band which, you know, when I was growing up playing, you know, I started playing guitar at the age of 6, you know. So I've been playing it almost, a long time. But, you know, it was when I got into my teens listening to, you know, this band, and I was never a Nirvana fan really, but definitely Pearl Jam and Soundgarden. What they were doing with guitars really got me. And then Jerry's work on this album, I mean, Rooster, I mean, wow, you know, them bones. I mean, you know, what do you think of this album? Down in a hole. Oh.
Down in a hole and wood, right? So, I mean, so really you have one of those classic 90s albums where really from the first song to the end song are obviously great hits. But just everything in between just fills it in really well. I'm not the biggest Alice in Chains fan. I mean, I like their songs, right? I never got to see them, obviously, you know, with everything that they have. I've never seen them as they've re-kicked off, you know, with their new lead singer. But I've seen, you know, some of the performances online and stuff like that. And, you know, they're good. So, you know, I like I said, I like their songs. And it's super exciting that, you know, like I said, that 30 years is crazy to think. 30 years,
it's a long time, man. I mean, one of mine is that, damn that rhythm! You know, like, Layne is fantastic. I mean, here's what I will say about the new lineup. I think Jerry's really the lead singer. I mean, really.
Yeah, I mean, Jerry Cantrell is a phenomenal guitarist, right? I mean, all the stuff he's done after Alice in Chains, really great stuff. So, you know, I really like it. Really, what actually I thought was where I really enjoyed Lane's stuff was when he was with the small time that they did with Mad Season.
Great album.
Yeah, I really enjoy Mad Season. You know, I think that's a phenomenal album, and that's where, you know, his voice is great and phenomenal in that one. Like I said, not to say I don't enjoy the Alice in Chains stuff, but that's Lane's. I like that album the best. For when he did that with the guys from Pearl Jam and stuff. So,
oh yeah, I mean, they got Mike to work on that from Pearl Jam, and Mike's the little secret genius of Pearl Jam. I mean, you've got Jeff Ament and Stone, who, you know, used to play in, was it Green River? I think it was, or whatever it was before. Before Pearl Jam, Mother Love Bone.
Mother Love Bone, yeah, with Andy.
Who's so. Yeah, there was a previous band to that too, Green River. Might have just been Stone, maybe. But anyway, so they're this tight little rhythm unit, and then, you know, obviously throw in the drummers. It was a Dave Kushner, I think, the first drummer. And then, of course, my favorite, Abruzzese. And I love, I mean, he's just power drumming. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the famous bit where, of course, he had a gun, or he's talking about a gun at one of their rehearsals. And Vettivier's like, hey, man, you like guns? And of course, the guy goes, well, you know, it's all right. Well, we're a Pearl Jam. We don't like guns. See ya. And that happened.
Crazy. So.
Oh, it's crazy. But look, Alice in Chains, great stuff. Mm-hmm. Grind, the next album, bit of a sleeper. But they've gone, I mean, there's always gold on one of their albums. Jerry Cantrell's Boggy Depot, though. Oh, whoa. Whole soul, though. That is a great album.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, Jerry's a phenomenal guitarist. So, you know, with his work with, you know, I mean, just obviously, you know, being part of, you know, with Ozzy Osbourne and all the work that he did with them and stuff. So really, like I said, phenomenal guitarist. You know, I definitely, I don't think, well, it's hard to say whether we'll get all of the grunge forefather bands to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Obviously they've given Nirvana it at this point. And they've given Pearl Jam now the opportunity just most recently. So I would expect Soundgarden to go in at some point.
Oh, yeah. Have to.
And then, I mean, the final kind of, like I said, Mount Rushmore would have to be, you know, Lane at the forefront of Alice in Chains there in that, early, you know, early to mid-90s before his untimely passing. I just don't know if it's enough though from that point. I mean, I would feel like it would be fine if he got, you know, eventually in. Like I said, great work. Like you said, I mean, Dirt's a phenomenal album. I mean, I don't know. Did it hit? I mean, it's obviously hit multi-platinum, didn't it? So I don't know if it's hit the tens or the 20 platinum level, but whatever it is, the 20 million. But I mean, I'm sure it's hit at least the 5 million at this point. I would think. I'd have to look it up. I'll have to Google it. So. Google flu real quick. So,
but I mean, yeah, there was a time where, you know, like everyone's a Nirvana. I'm like, look, yeah, they had a unique sound, but I don't think Kurt Cobain was potentially the greatest songwriter in the world. You compare it to Chris, and I mean, you know, these are all friends, by the way. You know, all of them were friends. Chris Cornell, though, such an intricate and different even darker storyteller when it came to music. I mean,
and a better voice. I mean, he's got the best voice of all of them,
of all time, personally. Yeah. I think, you know, and
I would definitely say he's phenomenal and definitely the best out of the grunge era, so for sure.
All right, put a voice up against Chris Cornell.
I mean, Bruce Dickinson,
it's a given.
Steve Perry,
Mike Patton
from Journey, right? So, Mike Patton. It's tough. I mean, and obviously, but like I said, but Chris, I mean, like I said, in rock and roll itself, Chris is probably a top five, like I mean, obviously a one of a kind. I mean, he was called the man with the golden voice for a reason, right? So, and like I said, I love his Scream album. I know that a lot of true grunge guys and stuff like that don't love it, but I think it's one of his best solo albums. Just one of the greatest albums of, in the rock's early in that 2000s, the noughties, as they call them, time frame. And I know it's mixed with Timbaland, you know, who's more of in the pop and, you know, R&B side of things, but, that's a phenomenal album. I could listen to that one from front to back. Just, you know, out of all of Chris's albums, I think that's his best. And it's his voice. I mean, it's just like you said. I mean, his writing, his voice, you can tell that, you know, he's had it where it's not like his early, where it's just pure dark. You know, it felt like more of the storyteller that he was, because obviously he'd, you know, been doing it for almost 30 years at that point. So, you know, but it felt like he, again, unfortunately with his, you know, demons and his passing, but, you know, overall, I just, you know, felt like he could have been the folk singer version out of the grunge, the way his writing was. Right. So.
Look, I reckon had it not been the tragedy, we would have seen him doing what Neil Diamond does now and do all the RSL clubs and stuff like that later.
Yeah, no doubt. And I'll agree with you. I mean, like Kurt, I don't even think Kurt's the best out of the band. I mean, obviously we've gotten everything we've gotten from Dave Grohl, who to me, I wouldn't be surprised if he goes in as a 3-time Hall of Famer. I know the only one, you know, the only 3-time Hall of Famer for Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Paul McCartney, the only one, right? So I think Dave Grohl can be the next one to go in. He's got Nirvana. There's no reason he shouldn't get it for Foo Fighters, and there's no reason he shouldn't get it for his solo work and his contributions to the rock and roll. So I definitely, you know, out of all that, I mean, yeah, Kurt Cobain, you know, who knows what the world would have looked like if Kurt would have lived, right? And the way the music world would have been. But yeah. I can say with his death and then us getting Dave Grohl to be who he is and everything he's done, I mean, that to me shaped rock and roll more than I think what Kurt would have done.
I think that first Foo Fighters album is better than Nevermind.
I can listen to that one a lot more than I could Nevermind, for sure. Like in today's thing, I'm not saying in the 90s would I, because I mean, obviously Teen Spirit was, you know, national anthem for, you know, us in the 90s, right? But, and I mean, that unplugged version is really good too. I mean, that's where I think, you know,
it's a good album. Yeah.
Pearl Jam's best is Unplugged as well. I could just listen to that nonstop, you know, out of all their albums. I mean, yeah, granted, it's mostly just 10 and a couple of the others that didn't make the cut that would come out later. But yeah, I mean, but I'm just more of an acoustic guy anyways. I mean, I love rock and roll and the heavy riffs and everything, but sometimes just listening to those voices.
Jeff Buckley fan.
Jeff Buckley. Yeah, this is, yeah.
You know, there's a lot of good stuff out here if you're into acoustic, folks. We've got the John Butler Trio. Now, if you've ever heard these guys, I mean, this guy is like lightning on a acoustic guitar, and it's jazzy, sort of folky, rocky stuff. It's funky as well. I'll send you some links later. You have to check it out. It's worth a look. You've checked out the Gurge though.
I did click on your links. I don't the always. I don't ignore you like some people might. I click your links. So yeah. So I like to see what the mullet can provide with some of the other things from down under. So and then just seeing the different side of a perspective of things that I like as well. But you know, like I said, there's different tastes, and it's always nice to see different things. So the Gurge, yes. So the Gurge. That was catchy.
It was. So, yeah, Regurgitate is the name of the band, folks. And the first album was called Duplang. And, of course, their lead off that album was Kong Fu Sing and All About the Bickies, of course, with a little fortune inside. Yeah, yes. And it's well worth checking out. It's a great little video too. Anyway, so we are here to chat about something today, folks. We are here to chat about Back to the Future, which came out a long, long time ago now, folks. You know, we're talking about, you know, a run of movies, actually, from 84 through to about 86, not just Back to the Future, which really were about time travel, family comedies, teen heartthrobs, teen troubles, high school, all that sort of stuff. Of course, we've talked about a few of these over the last couple of days, but I'm going to say Back to the Future is probably the one that sticks the most with us.
I mean, some folks will say, I know we're just going to talk about the first one here, but some folks mm-hmm. will say that it's the greatest trilogy out there, mm-hmm. is Back to the Future, right? So yep. it definitely hits a home run. And yeah, this one just, it's got, like you said, it's that 80s nostalgic feeling, right? And it's just everything yep. hits it. And then even though it goes back to the 50s, it hits all the 50s nostalgic too, right? So it's hitting two eras at the same time. And it's just, yeah, a really nice movie to your point where it hits back, you know, going back in time, it hits the family fun, it hits the comedy, and the, a little bit of action and zany, and obviously two main phenomenal actors, you know, that weren't quite, I mean, people knew about them, but they weren't quite where they were at, you know, today, if it wasn't for Back to the Future.
You know, you look at Doc Brown, Christopher Lloyd, for example. I mean, he was in One Who Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I think just before this, he did Star Trek, The Search for Spock, which...
Give me Genesis.
Yes. Kirk, I want to meet you down there. He's literally doing Doc Brown as a Klingon. It is awesome, you know. And he gets the coolest ship, too. He gets the Klingon Bird of Prey, you know. And he's got his little dog. He's kind of like... He is an office worker for me. He's not like your Klingon. He's kind of like, all right, we're here for 9 to 5 to be Klingons. Righto, what are we going to do? Well, we're going to go find Genesis, right? Get me Genesis.
Give me Phil Collins.
So. Oh, that's gold. That's gold. Why hasn't anyone done that as a meme yet?
I don't know. We could start it here, though.
In the air tonight, he's going to have to do that. You know,
there you go. So.
That's gold. But, you know, like, and then obviously he's done, you know, a lot of acting and comedies and TV and stuff like that too. So it was great.
And rumor is, he might be in a Star Wars movie or show.
Yes, so, yes.
Mean, obviously, I should say he's in it. I mean, he has definitely confirmed, so.
And breaking, Christian mm-hmm. Bale's asking to be in a Star Wars.
Yes, we'll see. We'll see.
You know his background?
Christian Bale?
Yeah, so he was up for Kenobi years ago back in
He turned one. Yeah. So, well, and then
he didn't I don't know if he turned it down, but it was a fight between him and McGregor. And because they'd just done Velvet Underground.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then afterwards they're kind of like they're both going up for it. So, and they were mates. So it's interesting to see if bit of fisticuffs involved, bit of a, I'm Batman, I'm Kenobi, man.
Well, I mean, to be fair, I mean, he didn't stand a chance because Ewan McGregor's British. So, I mean, he's got that accent that Alec Guinness, you know, hello there.
Yeah, but Bale's Welsh.
Yeah, but was Alec wasn't Welsh, was he?
No, British. Yeah, but I mean,
I mean, I know McGregor, it's close. I mean, it's
McGregor's there. Scottish. You're right. He's good to soon like us. Scottish?
I thought he was British.
Is he Scottish? No. He's Scottish. He's from Edinburgh.
Okay.
Aye, laddie. He's got the kilt and everything. Mm. And there's one thing he's going. Is he going to be called Kenobi McGregor?
Kenobi McGregor. He is the one. So.
Oh, you got to love it. You got to love it. But yeah, like honestly, and then Michael J. Fox, I knew from Teen Wolf. Mm-hmm. Which he was doing pretty much at the same time and also doing Family Ties at the same time.
Yeah.
How crazy is that?
Well, I mean, he was just one of those, up and rising stars. Like he did stuff as a kid, but obviously mm-hmm. Michael J. Fox was older as he was doing this. He just looked like a kid, right? Because he had the G's. I mean, even now that he's in his 70s, he still looks like a kid. So,
oh, he does. It's crazy even now. You know, he still looks like the same age. You know?
Yeah,
you know
he's kind of like Paul Rudd, if you think about it, right? Like, he just looks the same. Like, if anything, he looks 20 years younger, even though he's 20 years older, right? So,
yeah, how the hell does Paul Rudd pull that off, honestly?
He's really, he's, well, he might be Benjamin Button, right? So.
Yeah, he might go in reverse years.
He's going in reverse.
Reverse dog years or something like that. I don't know. This is crazy. So I first saw this movie in the drive-in. Where did you see it?
Well, to be honest, because I'm a little bit younger. So I was not able to see movies when this came out. The first Back to the Future movie I was able to see in the theater was Back to the Future 3. I wasn't able to see 1 and 2 at the same, you know, I mean, I because I'm trying to think, when did Back to the Future 2 come out? Googling it right now. It came out in 89. So I would have been 6. Maybe did I see that one? Now that I think about it, I might have seen that one because I would have been 6. And obviously, mm-hmm. I think actually, no, take that back. I think I did see number 2 in the movie theater because obviously the big thing as a kid was the sneaker pumps, you know, pumping those up. And then, you know, the flying, you know, skateboards, right? The saucers there. So. So I, now that I think about it, maybe I did see that. I know for sure I saw 3. But yeah, number 1, I wasn't able to see that.
Well, so. I saw it on a double bill with Supergirl.
Oh, okay. Very
so, cool. So mind you, I just went straight to the meat pie shop, when Supergirl started afterwards. I'm like, hey.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That cameo by, because Christopher Reeves makes that cameo, right? So
yeah, he does. Like, I mean, we stuck around to watch that because we wanted to see Christopher Reeve. But I mean, they end up turning it around. Movie, it is what it is. I'm pretty sure that was done by Canon Pictures, so there wasn't that much budget involved in that one.
Yeah.
Because then they did Superman 4 with Meteor Man or whatever it is. You know, like it's.
Yeah. Which one had Pryor in it, Richard Pryor in it. Was that 3 or was that 4?
That was 3.
That was 3. Okay. So, all right. Couldn't
remember. That's a hard watch, that movie.
Yeah, that one. Yeah, 4 is decent, right? 4 is the one that's at the piece, right?
Mm-hmm. And Meteor Man.
Yeah, Meteor Man.
Or,
so.
Or Nuclear Man or whatever he is, you know? Like it's crazy. But those first two movies, I mean, work so well together, particularly if you've got the newer cut, the director went back and actually got a chance to actually do his version of it, of the second one, because he filmed both of them back together. But there's scenes that really are mythic in sort of a Star Wars time, particularly with the kryptonite and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I haven't been able to see those. I mean, I'll be honest, I haven't watched them in forever. Mm-hmm. They're probably due for a rewatch. Actually, I probably should just buy them on 4K at this point. But
oh, yeah. But so. I mean, you're heading up to like Man of Steel and Snyder's, you know, got to do a dark vision, got to kill a million people. And we go like, yeah, right. Who the hell sold that off and said, yeah, this guy's good. He did Watchmen and he did he did the same thing in Watchmen. It killed genocide.
To be fair, at least that was in the original comic book.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was. It was. But it was also not Dr. Manhattan that did it. It was a huge, huge octopus looking beast thing, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. His 300 was pretty solid, though.
Yeah. I mean, we could go down the train of Snyder. I mean, I think it's at least his stuff. I give credit for Batman versus Superman, the super long cut, because I never watched the original because I heard it was so bad, the 2.5-hour version. Yeah. So the first time I watched it was just his director's cut of the 4-hour version. I was like, it wasn't that bad. I mean, at least, you know, it wasn't obviously no, you know, world building like MCU was doing, but at the same time, it was at least something was entertaining. It was a lot better than I give it credit for. So, but yeah, I mean, so, but anyways, back to the future.
Back to the future. So we do this rabbit hole.
Go down the rabbit holes.
A lethal rabbit hole. So, with this one too, so I knew him pretty well from, of course, Back to the Future. Back to the Future, from Family Ties into the Back to the Future, but also from Teen Wolf. And then find out the second movie of Teen Wolf, it's Jason Bateman that's taken over because he's come also over from knowing them at Family Ties because, of course, Justine's sister was Michael J. Fox's sister in that that TV show. So yeah, I was kind of like, okay, what's going on here? What's happening with this? You know, what's going to happen? And, you know, I was like, wow, this is damn good. And then, of course, they get back in time. The makeups, and I mean, some of the favorite characters, Biff, obviously, Biff Tannen.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like, it's not something I expected them to do sequels for. I thought the whole Doobie Continue thing was just a gag because I thought the time travel. And then, what, 3 or 4 years later, we get 2 and 3.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah. No, it was, like I said, I remember watching Back to the Future on TV because that's what we might have had. I mean, we might have done it on VHS. By the first time I got to see it, I would have been probably 4 or 5, right? So before I got to see Back to the Future Part 2, obviously my parents would have seen it in the theater, you know, because I would have just been 1 at the time that came out, but they would have been able to see it with a date night, I'm sure. But yeah, I'm pretty sure I saw it on the TV and it would have been either a VHS tape or it would have been possibly maybe on, because I mean, that was, like you said, several years later, before Back to the Future 2 came out in 89. So that was 5 years. So that might have been on basic TV by then.
And it was 1990, the third one came out, if I'm mm-hmm. correct.
Yeah, it would have been just that following year or 2 years later, but because they basically filmed them kind of like what they do with a lot of movies now, that they go straight to 3 movies. They film back to back almost, right? So,
yeah, that's right.
So, but and it just makes sense too, right? So since the way they ended 2 was the way they ended, or you know, brought in 1 and connected it, and then just go shoot it off right into 3. So
100%. And what I loved is the continuity is, you know, they were really conscious of it in each of the, I mean, how they were able to do 2's the most confusing, because not only, I mean, they're using the same sets we used for all 3 pretty much. I mean, except for the Western set had to be a new set. Like, they couldn't build it on the top of the back lot. Now, anyone that knows that, you go to Universal Studios in LA, you do see that back lot. You know, it's there. You know,
and that's what made it famous.
That's what made it famous, 100%. Yeah. The clock tower and all that sort of stuff. There's certain streets. It's not, you go a little bit further. Now, you can do this all on Google Maps right now. You can actually look at it in 3D and you can see the streets where Spock and Kirk were in the gangsters' outfits with the Tommy guns running down the streets going, rat-a-tat-a-tat-a. You know, like it's, there's all that stuff there. There's the old Jaws set stuff there. You know? But anyway, yeah, that set's there. But the fact that they redressed it for the future scenes and then they redressed it for 55 and for 85.
Mm-hmm. And then in 2015, right, when they redid the, I mean, or did they have to reshoot it for when they did the updated when Biff has the casino and all that stuff?
No, I'm pretty sure that was the same thing as used, but they just literally did stuff over the top of it, you know?
That's, yeah, I mean, it was just like, well, I mean, basically everything was just run down, right? I mean, everything, the clock tower was run down, the whole park was destroyed. And then obviously when they went to the casino area, that was a new shot. But yeah, everything around there was supposed to be the same, which, like I said, was great.
You know, Zemeckis is an interesting filmmaker. Obviously, this is his pride and joy is this, and he will not let a sequel ever happen again. You know, it's and nor should it. I mean, really, it's a wrapped up story, you know.
Well, I think doing a sequel would make no sense, but they've talked about doing a reboot for a while now.
Yeah. I think even he said he doesn't want them to touch it, you know. It is what it is. But it's interesting. He's done some really interesting movies. Romancing the Stone, with, of course, Michael Douglas.
And, yeah.
Kathleen Turner and Danny DeVito, and this is a great cast in that one.
I love Danny.
Oh, Danny's great, you know. And if, like, the fact that she's an author, she's going through all these little villages and stuff like that. They're stuck. And, you know, the big drug dealer guy, you know, is kind of like, John Wilder? John Wilder? It brings him in and shows the whole place. Yeah. You know, it's crazy. And then you've got Jewel of the Nile, which is the sequel, which is actually a pretty damn good film. Now, I don't know if he just produced that one. I know he didn't direct it. But then you've got movies as wild as Forrest Gump and Beowulf.
Yeah. More selling of Angela Jolie, and that was about it.
You know, the funniest bit of that is when he's telling the story. I was out in the ocean, right? I was out in the ocean. I had this massive fish, which was like 40 feet long, comes up, tries to kill me. And of course, I strip bare. I get in the middle, takes me life, and I takes me up in the air, and I ripped its head apart, and I went, Beowulf! It's the most weirdest call. And I don't know, hey, Rob, if you're listening tonight, Robert Zemeckis, I don't know if you intentionally made that funny, but the whole seminar room that I was in, like the whole theater, just erupted in laughter. And I mean, this is your big hero point. This is meant to be his big line, like, I'm going to cut that fish, you know? And that was more like, Beowulf! What? Oh my god.
Yeah, but he's been up there too. He's been making movies for a long time, so he did.
Oh, he's great. The first one I ever saw him in was The Talented Mr. Ripley, it might have been.
Okay.
It was one of those Ripley movies. I can't remember which one it was. But there was also what else did I see him in that was good? King Arthur with Clive Owen.
Okay, yeah.
Not a great film, but, directed by Antoine Fuqua, who did literally the same storyline in a Bruce Willis movie called Tears of the Sun, and directed it.
That movie was so boring. I wanted to go see that movie so bad. I remember my dad and I taking me to go see the movie because it was rated R and I wasn't old enough yet to go see that. And that was so boring. So boring.
Yep.
So
it had no excuse to be boring. And I mean, and then it's funny because we got to the end of it. I'm like, this is just King Arthur. Like literally it's the same story. You know, they're taking a group of people to another place and making them safe. You know, It's Tears of the Sun. Like Tears of the Sun is King Arthur. Anyway, but he was in that. He was playing Boss. And that's where we went. Oh, that's why they chose him. Because he's like, Boss.
Yeah, well, he's playing it. But my favorite movie from his, other than Back to the Future, is definitely The Frighteners.
Oh, that's a great movie.
I mean, I think he's just the producer on that one. He isn't a director, but
yes, Peter Jackson directed that.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Plus,
was it the ghost version of Ali Ermey, Gunnery Surgeon?
You can. So, but yeah, he's, like I said, I love that movie too. So I think that's, but yeah.
Good stuff. And Lee Thompson, she's so good in this as the mum. And obviously she was in Howard the Duck.
Mm-hmm. Apparently he directed the new Pinocchio.
Is that right? I thought it was Spielberg. You're probably right.
Yeah. No, director Robert Zemeckis. So.
My goodness, there you go. You learn something new.
I haven't watched that one yet. I don't know if you pulled it out yet either.
No, not yet. I've got to say, the last great one I saw him do was Forrest Gump. That was my, I personally think.
As I go through the line of stuff, well, he did Flight, which was the one with Denzel. That was a decent movie. Mm-hmm. Because Castaway was okay, but it's not something that
Wilson.
Yeah, you can really rewatch as much as you can with Forrest Gump. Death Becomes Her. That's one of my mom's favorite movies.
It's a good one.
Contact. So that's pretty good too.
Oh, Contact's a great movie. Actually, that's a great one.
Yeah.
Very ambiguous ending.
Yeah. That's for director. That's all he has. So that's really worth calling out. So unless you want to do, he did an episode of Johnny Bago. So
so what's your favorite scene in the original Back to the Future?
Probably anytime he does some guitar playing doing Chuck Berry. Barry, it's your cousin Marvin Barry. I heard that sound you're looking for. And he does the phone, right? So
a little bit of other news for you in that one is the Biff group that he's got there. So we've got Biff, we've got Billy Zane as one of the background guys. And for Young Guns fans, we actually have Charlie Simisco there, of course. You know who that is. Mm-hmm. Or Casey Simisco, I should say. It's Charlie. Hey, Charlie! You gotta shoot a bag of wood.
Yes, little Emilio. So
little Emilio.
Little Emilio. So but little Emilio. Yeah, that's probably my favorite scene from it. Or the scenes, because like I said, there's also the beginning too when he hooks up everything, all the amps, and then blows himself backwards. And then just the score itself too. Anytime they actually do the main theme from it, you know, it's a dun 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 dun. You know that part when he's in the car, the DeLorean. Obviously, the DeLorean's great too. I mean, that was a cool car, right? I mean, it's just too bad that the car itself sucked. Otherwise, you know, it might have lasted longer. Not an original DeLorean, no. So
no. Well, I had a chance a couple of years ago to jump in one, and in your style of drive, by the way, too. Wasn't an Australian conversion, and drove like a brick. Got to say, I was pretty. You know, I thought this would be great. And then jump in
I could be like crap.
Yeah. Mind you, I've had the same with a Corvette too. I was in a Corvette once, and it didn't drive like it was advertised, put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, that's sometimes they overhype those things, so but yeah, no,
like Aussie muscle cars is where it's at, buddy.
Yeah, so well, all of them end up in some type of George Romero movie, so yes, I would imagine.
nice. So that's the thing with this. We're Back to the Future's had so many different things since merchandise-wise. Like, I collect the cars. I mean, they pop up in many different die-cast versions. What's something you collect from the series?
From Back to the Future? I wouldn't have collected anything from the series itself, unfortunately. Most of my stuff is Star Wars or cards. I'm trying to think. Did I have a toy? I mean, I know I bought when it hit 35 years, a few years ago, when they came out with the new Blu-ray version of it, right? The 3-pack. I bought that when it hit the 35 edition, because crazy it sounds, here in a couple of years, it'll hit 40 years. But I had that. And then I remember they did kind of do a sequel beyond what Zemeckis wanted, though, because they did do a cartoon of it. So
yeah, they did.
So I remember watching that. I thought wasn't quite. I mean, obviously, you could always say Rick and Morty's the sequel, but
but you know, folks, if you can get something, you get something that George McFly actually wrote, which was, of course, Match Made in Space.
Nice.
Yes, or you can go and do some betting. Of course, on the past games, of course, and the Sports Almanac. And yes, it has all the statistics, like proper.
Yeah, I mean, as in the actual movie, it would have just been theoretically blank, you know, pages or just funny predictions, but this is actual legit. Because that's cool that they would have came out with that specialty version just for the 50s, the 2000s, because of the homage, because Back to the Future was such a phenomenon.
The only thing, it doesn't have the slipcase. That's the only thing that sort of puts it off. It's a nice matte finish though in that one. So definitely worth, if you can find it on Amazon, it's in there too. You know, I love it. Look, I love it. I probably love the sequels more than I love the original, but all three, you have to watch together. When I watch them, it's a quick trilogy to get through. They're only about 85, 90 minutes long each.
Yeah. Well, and we both love a good ZZ Top Western song, so I love that part about number three. And I would probably say my favorite is probably three, just because it goes to the zany West, right? Like obviously I can, and the thing about it too is, like, unlike most movies, you can just watch one without really watching any of the others, and it still kind of makes sense. They're kind of like their own little movies, but to your point, like you were mentioning earlier, they're still all connected, right? So they're kind of their own movies, but then they're all connected within this, you know, because let's be honest, they only really cover like a week span, just at three different points in time, but they're all a week span in this, you know, in each universe or timeline. So, but yeah, like I said, I would say probably three is my favorite.
Nice. And of course, I love that three's got the references to Master Eastwood.
Yeah, he's got his pink boots, so, and his ass off. So
what kind of moccasins they say? It says Nikkei.
Which is great. And then it's Mad Dog Tanner. So
you know what's great about that too is out in Australia, we had a certification classification ads that used to be on the VHSs back when that movie came out, and they had body of evidence for the sexual content one said 18 plus. Then it said something for like Disney stuff or something like that, and then another old movie. And then the one for foul language was Mad Dog Tan. At least I'm not some dude off egg Sutton gutter trash. And then you had Arnie going, hasta la vista, baby. You know, like, and it was all in the one thing. Australian classification. Look at your symbol. So we knew that scene real well.
There you go. I mean, like I said, it's just one of those movies. Like I said, it's not, like you said, it's not grotesque, or it's not something that's just a classic 80s feel through all mm-hmm. three movies. And it's just, yeah. It, like you said, it hits it. And it's just one of those things where, yeah, you can watch it today. Yeah. Some of the things for 2015 didn't come true. We don't have flying cars. I mean, we have flying cars, just not to the caliber of what they produced in the movie. But a lot of the other things though, I mean, it's crazy, right? We work from home and we do things, you know, with the faxing and the email, you know, and all that stuff. And, you know, they still had big phones back then, but and
microwavable pizzas.
Yeah, and the computer screens were obviously, you know, not as cool. But yeah, we could have the little pizzas and then they blow up, right? So
it's nuts. So out of this first movie, what would you get out of 5 on the Hallenbeck scale?
Can I give it a 4.5, or do I have to give it, because I can only chop off half my finger? So
yeah, you can do that.
There you go. So I would say 4.5. Like I said, it's pretty rewatchable at any point in time. Like I said, I wouldn't say it's a complete masterpiece, but I will say it's a pretty darn good piece of work.
Awesome. So folks, I'm going to give it a 4. I think it's great, but I think there's parts and jokes in it that didn't quite sell it sometimes there. And I think it gets a lot lost sometimes in the Easter eggs that it tries to pop up in there all the time. Particularly now for this new generation, we'll not get it, because it's a lot of it's for when we were younger, we'd get the jokes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But as a trilogy, it's a 5, because it works. You see, they all work together. So for me, it's a 5 out of 5 for those too. So, well, I got to say, I want to see, you know, what comes next in terms of Star Wars and, of course, Andor. But what are you most looking forward to in the next couple of weeks?
Vacation, because I've got some PTO time. But for streaming services, Andor, like I said, is phenomenal. I've been enjoying She-Hulk and Rings of Power. So those have been kind of the three primary shows that I make sure that I'm hitting kind of on that Wednesday, Thursday, Friday time frame. Plus, because it's also college football season. Or American football. So that way, obviously I know it's not, you know, rugby football type deal, or even soccer football version of what you guys are aware of. I know. So the
Brits can have that.
Yeah. So, but you know, like I said, that's where I'm at right now. So that's where most of my time goes on the weekends when I can.
Fantastic, mate. Fantastic. Well, I want to thank you for being on the show today. And, of course, definitely, listeners, go and check out, of course, What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast. And check out the episode that I did with them, because it was a lot of fun. We definitely had some laughs and got stuck into Cassian Andor.
Leander.
Andor. Where's Andor? Andor. Get over here. Andor. Where's my coffee, Andor? Andor.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. Here are the other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. Culture Clash, where we discuss the latest in entertainment and pop culture. Blood of Kings, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theater, we celebrate our favorite movies. And Time Warp, our fandom flashback show discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie, TV, and pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Hair Metal Podcast, we cover the rock metal music of the 80s and early 90s. Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, discussing the time-traveling Doctor Who universe. Lethal Mullet, an action film podcast, covering the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Also, check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, our Star Wars podcast. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, with a deep dive into the final frontier. The Fandom Show, our Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube show discussing the hottest topics in fandom. The True Believers MCU podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic and Television Universe. Union Federation, our Star Trek, and the Orville Show. And we're proud to welcome the BQN Network to the Fandom Podcast Network. Please visit our friends on the BQN Network, a Star Trek universe podcast that also includes your favorite topics, movies, history, superheroes, and more. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on YouTube. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on all major podcast platforms. The Fandom Podcast Network audio master feed is on Podbean at fpnet.podbean.com. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.